What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Bruin at McEwen. I am your host this evening, Adam Cartwright, and with me, as always, on Monday nights is Matthew Giardino. Matt, how are you doing, bud?
Doing good. Bulls got another series win, and that makes five of them for the season. So really excited to see how we do this coming week.
Fantastic, fantastic. What's also awesome is joining us for a second week in a row is fellow Bruin crew member John Kaplan. John, how you doing, man?
We are doing well out here. You guys know I'm all about the pitching, and it's good to see two of our starting pitchers in the top five in the AAC for ERA. So that's always exciting to hear for us, for sure.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about both of those pitchers when we break down our weekend series against Wichita State. Sorry, almost said Charlotte there. But against Wichita State, we're going to break that down. We're also going to look at the American Athletic Conference results, take a look at the pick 'em, give you a little hint. I don't think anybody did very good. We'll talk about those games that everybody seemed to miss. We'll then take a look at the standings, and we've got some social media questions that will play along with those. And so the guys will give you their thoughts on that before we preview the midweek game against Stetson and the ever anticipated matchup with the UTSA that is coming up this weekend. Finishing off as we look at the 11.7 Bulls, which little hint, if you caught it on X, Bulls are moving on up. But let's get right into it, guys. Friday was a victory. Of course, we had Corey Braun on the mound. Not his typical start. However, as he always does, he battles. John, I'll kick it over to you without further ado, man. Tell me, what did you think about Corey Braun's start on Friday night?
Yeah, I think that's about two. That's 2 weeks in a row where he came out with not his best stuff, in my opinion. He went 5 1/3 on 101 pitches. I mean, he did allow 8 hits with three of those coming in the first inning. Not a huge K day for him either. You know, he was 4-1 on the strikeout to walk ratio, but what he did was limit damage. You know, and that's what great pitchers do. When you allow those ducks on the pond, you got to limit the damage. And he did. He allowed one earned run through 5 1/3. I believe Keister came in through like 1 2/3 in relief, and I think got him out of that sixth inning. It wasn't really a jam. I think he got the first batter out, and then Keister came in for the last two. But yeah, no, another exemplary effort from Corey Braun. He's top five in K's in conference play, and has the third best ERA in the American in conference play at 2.45. And then coming in behind him, behind Keister, rather, was Landon York. He had a 38 pitch outing, two innings on the day. He allowed one hit and struck out three in the process. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, fellas, that's his fifth save on the season. But with how we've kind of been setting up the pitching thus far in conference play, I really think that might be his first save in conference play. So it was good to see Landon York be near perfect, coming in the back end and really just showing us why he's cemented himself as the back end reliever for us.
Absolutely. You know, credit to Wichita State. I mean, their problems is not swinging the bat. They got some hitters. They really came out and ambushed Corey Braun early, and that kind of led up to his pitch count. I'll kick it over to you now, Matt. What did you think when you watched the pitching on Friday?
I think the staff did a great job of limiting the damage, just like John said. You know, in a game where you give up 12 hits, we only gave up one walk as a pitching staff, and to only give up one earned run, for a 9-inning game, I think that's a job well done, and exactly what you need in order to win those Friday night games. And luckily, we had some offense too to back our guys up.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of that offense, it was a good night for Jackson Mayo and Carlos Hakame, as they had collected doubles. Hakame collected a triple. It was actually the home run short of the cycle in this one. Bulls collected 9 hits total to bring in the 4 runs. Matt, I'll kick it right back to you here for the hitting. Who stood out to you offensively?
Yeah, my guy Carlos Hakame, he had a great game, and he carried that all throughout the weekend. Ended up getting on the AAC honor roll. He went 3 for 3 in this game with a walk. He was on base all four times, and then also on top of that, Ryan Pruitt also had a pretty big base hit as well as an RBI. Sebastian Greco, he continued to swing a good bat. He kind of was slumping a little bit, but now he's back in a good groove, and we saw the power stroke too come back in the later part of the weekend.
Absolutely. Carlos Hakamé did have a fantastic week. I'm glad he gave him his flowers there for his honor roll mention. I did see something where he posted something like an 1800 OPS over the weekend. So huge, huge weekend. Matt, or I'm sorry, John, what stood out to you offensively?
I really just kind of more of the same. I agree with Matt. We haven't seen Greco's best numbers past 2 or 3 weeks. He's still been getting on the stat sheet, but just not in usual fashion. He was 2 for 5. I think he was one of three to have multi-hit efforts, or I think it was him and Hakamé and Greco both had multi-hit efforts in this one, but two singles, no ribbies. That's just not the usual night for Greco. But we're glad to see him getting hot again. And like Matt said, he definitely finds a power stroke later on in the weekend. But I want to talk a little bit more about Hakamé. Adam, you mentioned him being a home run away from the cycle, but in conference play alone, he's top five in pretty much every category in the AAC. He's tied for fifth in home runs with four. He's tied for fifth in RBIs in conference play with 20. And he's tied for third most RBI, I'm sorry, 20 RBIs. And then he's tied for third most hits in conference play with 23 hits. So that's 23 hits, 20 RBIs, and four home runs for those having trouble following me stuttering along here. But I'm really impressed with him, to be honest. He's really been killing it, and I can't say enough about what Hakamé is bringing to this offense.
Absolutely. And one thing about you mentioned Greco not having the RBI in this one. I think this is the one where we might have had a little bit of a base running blunder that might have cost him an RBI. Somebody didn't score where maybe they should have scored. Matt, I'll kick it over to you. You got anything else on the offense?
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to say too is it's interesting having Hakamé be on the bottom part of the order, especially with the stats that John mentioned there. I think it would be interesting, especially his knack for making contact and putting the ball in play, moving him up a little bit more in the lineup, maybe put him at number four or number five and see what he could do in that role.
Absolutely. You want to you obviously want to get your better hitters to the top of the order, as they will get more at bats, just as it cycles through. Also don't want to disrupt rhythm, but of course that is something that Coach Hannes will have his finger on that pulse. He'll understand what he's doing there. But again, like you mentioned, Matt, it would be good to see him getting some top of the order action. One other thing I wanted to point out, we saw Matt Rose all three games at starting at third base, even against righties, where we thought maybe there was a platoon situation with Puckett. We did see Puckett make an appearance on Sunday, so we'll talk about that when we get there. But again, just wanted to, he didn't have any hits in this one. I think he did pick up some hits as we talk about these later games. But, just interesting that him coming back into the order. And, you talk about Hakamé, the way he hits, you look at Greco, him being our major power threat. And then you look at Brad Keylor, the way he plays defense, you understand that he's not really going to leave that shortstop position. It really does make that third base the only real spot where there is a little bit of wiggle room to get some opportunities. And so you can just feel the tension between Rose and Puckett as they take these at bats, because they really are battling for that really one kind of open spot in this order. Because I mean, you look at it, guys. I'll kick it over to you now. Where else do you think somebody isn't just absolutely entrenched in the order? John?
There isn't a position really, in my opinion. You look at our outfield, it's been pretty well set all season, especially in conference play. And I think you bring up a really, really good point about the infield. We've been pretty set on that as well. You could make an argument for Matt Rose at second because I think he offers a little bit more defensively than Hakamé, but how can you even talk about changing anything with Hakamé with the kind of offensive production that we just spent 10 minutes talking about, I think you bring up a really good point there. And I think that is honestly a really good answer to the question last week. it's just a limited availability for guys to slot in, you know? So we're just, it's not necessarily a quid versus quo. It's more so just this is the only position we have available for multiple guys to slot in at. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think eight of those nine positions are locked up, or eight of those nine positions are locked up. But definitely, I think it's good to continue to give both of those guys an opportunity because, like we've seen this past weekend, both of those guys have shown some really good production, and we saw later on in the series some power that came through from Puckett.
Absolutely. Well, it is interesting. It is something that we're going to keep an eye on as we move forward. But we're going to keep on moving now in our breakdown of the weekend, going on to Saturday. Not our best day on Saturday, but sometimes that happens. It was a 7-5 loss to the Shockers of Wichita. Austin Newton picks up his I think this would be his third start of the season, kind of I would say his second one where the intent was to really try to go. Kind of up and down. What'd you think, John?
I think that his outing really got limited by, that 3-run home run in what was it, the fifth inning, that ended up kind of securing the lead for Wichita State. He went 4 2/3. He's continuing to stretch out. He got to 74 pitches. So, I mean, you got to take what you can get right now, and that's good news. He's continuing to progress in his rehab from injury, and 74 pitches. I mean, you're really getting close to quality starting numbers there in terms of pitch total. He had 4 earned, 6 hits. You love not seeing any walks. He struck out 5 and had 0 walks on the day, which I wanted to mention because Matt mentioned something about the total walk number on the weekend. We're actually first in conference in overall walks allowed as a pitching staff, which is incredible to see. I really love limiting those kind of preventable errors. But Austin Newton, I don't think his numbers really indicate like the quality of the outing that he has had that on Saturday. But I do think that there is some room for improvement. He probably wishes he can have that pitch back. But it is what it is, you know?
Absolutely. And hey, listen, we talked about it on Friday. This Shocker lineup can swing the metal. They put 8 hits on Corey Braun and 5 2/3, 6 hits on Newton is nothing to shake a stick at. Again, those guys are swinging the bat. Like you said, no walks. Matt, what'd you think, man?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here is just the jump in pitch count that we got to see out of Austin Newton this past weekend. Honestly, I thought that the progression would be a little bit slower. He went from 33 pitches to 45 pitches, and to jump all the way up to 74 pitches this past week, I think that's a huge, great sign. Especially, when we consider that he's supposed to be in our weekend rotation to start out the year before the injury. Really good stuff from him. I mean, obviously the pitch count is going to get up a little bit higher with the high strikeout count too, with 5 strikeouts. But like John mentioned, no walks. That's awesome to see. And really, besides that one bad pitch that led to a home run, unbelievable outing by him. And I think he's just going to continue to be such a key piece to our weekend rotation.
Absolutely. I was looking at, so something to kind of point out in this one. It was 58 degrees and overcast, and I know that there was water on the cameras as you were watching this game on Saturday, and I do understand that these aren't the very fancy cameras, but it was kind of a crummy environment, and you know, not a very conducive environment to pitch in. So battling the conditions, I thought it was pretty good. They got a fantastic start on the other side from Brady Hamilton. Maybe somebody that was maybe used to that situation, I don't know, but he threw 7.2 innings and only 3 earned runs against that. We know our lineup can swing it, so you have to give him his credit. Speaking of our lineup, we'll kick over to it. Ryan Pruitt, Marcus Brodell, and Brad Keylory all pick up doubles, and that will do it for the extra base hits. 9 strikeouts on the day. Matt, I'll kick it to you, bud. What did you think about the offense?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is, 9 strikeouts. You don't want to see that. That's pretty rough. But overall, there wasn't too much really to talk about when it came to the offense. We had some RBI base hits, but two little hits and two spread apart too. We couldn't really get any rallies going to really sustain anything. We didn't even leave too many guys on base either, which has been an issue for us. Throughout the season, we only had two guys left on base. But ultimately, these games are tough, especially in weather, like you mentioned. We saw a struggle against Memphis when the weather got a little bit colder as well. But that's definitely something to keep an eye out for as the season keeps going on. But hopefully we can continue to avoid the cold weather. And luckily for us, the conference tournament is in Clearwater where it'll probably be like 95 degrees by then.
Absolutely. All of our games, I believe, for the rest of the season are in the state of Florida. Someone can check me on that. But, John, what do you think about the offense on Saturday?
I mean, I think all you can really say is that we were efficient scoring. We had 5 runs on 5 hits. I'd like to, like you guys said, see that strikeout total come down, but we talked about this a little bit last week. Brady is, in my opinion, is their best starting arm in their weekend rotation. So, you win some, you lose some. It's baseball, but yeah, we're gonna have those days. And just like you said, that's not real conducive to pitching. It's just not real conducive to baseball, that weather. So we were battling the elements a little bit. We're on the road. You gotta give and take, and we got the series dub, and we have a lot more good news coming on Sunday. But yeah, we had 5 bowls with hits on the day. That's really all I got, man. Pruitt, Hakmay, Brodel, Rose, and Betancourt all with hits. So good to see Rose get on the right side of the stat sheet. I think he had a single hit on the day. So yeah, that fires me up a little bit.
Yeah, like you said, just not a very fun day on Saturday. Weather wasn't great, game was we call it okay. We're gonna move on to Sunday because Sunday was a whole lot better. 13-4 victory. Couple of those runs late were some gimme stuff. Weather a little better, right? 65 for this one. Sorry, Jack Nedrow. We talked about his start last week, maybe being the best start of the season. I think he kind of said hold my beer and topped it. John, what'd you think?
Man, Jack really just go. He goes 8 innings strong on 112 pitches. He did allow 4 earned. He kind of lights up the strike zone a little bit. Doesn't have a lot of plus velo, so if he misses even by a little bit, those bats are gonna get their chances. He had 7 hits in 8 innings, and he's never been a real big strikeout guy. He had 2 Ks and 1 walk, limited free passes. Depended on his defense to make plays behind him. But I can't speak enough about Jack Nedrow, to be honest. I mean, he's so much fun to watch. In conference play, he's got a 2.67 ERA, which is fourth best in the American. I believe he's top 5 in hits allowed as well. He hits his spots, he limits errors, and it really fires me up too, because I remember when we got news of him being recruited, we were all fired up. We're like, oh my God, we got our Friday night guy. We got our Friday night guy. 'Cause he came in as just had this, I mean, he came in from D2, mind you, but like he came in with this starting pedigree where he was just a bulldog. He was going to be a leader, and he's doing all of that in conference play when it matters. So I can't say enough about what we saw from Jack. He did give up, I think, a couple home runs later in his outing, but then you had Nolan Bernard come in and finish it up with another bull almost with a perfect outing. He was a walk away from being perfect. He didn't allow Nolan Bernard did not allow a single hit and no runs on 1 walk and 1 K. So a really good day on the bump from the Bulls, and you really love to see it.
Absolutely. I think you've really seen Nedrow blossom now that he's kind of slid into that I'm the Sunday kind of role guy, and there's not really that balance of will I go Saturday, will I go Sunday. He's kind of knowing what he's going to do now on a weekly basis, and I think that's playing well for him. Matt, what did you think about the pitching?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Jack this past weekend was the fact that he threw 84 strikes out of his 112 pitches. So he was consistently in the zone the whole day. And with that netted some really great results for him. He only walked one batter, seven hits that were scattered. He would probably like to have those three home run pitches back. At that point, he's looking at 8 innings of shutout ball. Who knows, maybe he could have gone a complete game shutout, but besides that, you can't really ask more from Jack, and he's done a really great job of locking down that Sunday role.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Jack did a really good job of doing exactly what we needed him to do, which was he'd be absolutely dominant for, five, six plus innings. And then at that point, our offense did what they needed to do. And what Jack needed to do at that point was extend this as far as we can go, which means we got to be in the zone. And that's a little tougher to do. Especially with a team that can swing it, like we saw with Wichita State. Listen, Livingston is a good hitter. If you leave it down the center, he's going to do some damage, which is what he did twice in this game. So again, he kind of bit us. But again, that one in the eighth, probably a gimme there. Again, I think that was a leadoff kind of ambush, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic. What was also fantastic was the offense. Ryan Pruitt with a breakout day. He has three hits, big home runs from Greco, backside Oppo Taco. That's always fun to watch from him. Lance Triple comes out with a big swing. Stuart Puckett, pinch hit home run. We mentioned it earlier. We'll talk about it now. Matt, I'll go to you first, bud. What stood out to you?
Yeah, it's funny. Both on the Sebastian Greco home run and the Lance Triple home run, I was thinking to myself, man, these guys are due for a home run. Like they have a good amount of home runs, but at that particular moment, I was like, these guys are due to hit home runs. And sure enough, the same at bat, they hit their home runs. And overall, it was just a fantastic offensive outburst. All across the order, we had some really good offensive days. And we got a good performance from Ryan Pruitt as well. Just having three home runs in a game, you can't complain about that. And especially Stuart Puckett coming off the bench. And we hadn't seen the home run production that we saw from him as a freshman, but maybe he's starting to get that swing back a little bit.
Absolutely. Ball was flying in this one. I think they had a couple home runs, three of their own, three for us as well. So ball was really, really flying. John, what'd you think about offense?
I really liked seeing that early run surge. That does a lot for a pitcher. That third inning was huge. It was a six inning third a six run third inning for us. That probably really helped Nedro settle in this one and pitch comfortably. We had a couple bulls with multi-hit efforts and Greco and who else was the multi-hit effort? I was
Hakame.
Greco and
Oh, I'm
Pruitt.
sorry. Yeah. Pruitt.
And then I think all but two bulls had a hit on the day. So you really love seeing that. And while we're not seeing the home run total or home run production from Stuart Puckett, if I would love to see the advanced statistics on exit velo, because it just even his outs seem super loud, and he's in and those balls that he's hitting through the 4-3 hole, are just screamers, So I'm really seeing the I'm loving seeing the live action off of his bat, and seeing Matt Rose get an extra base hit. It was his single hit on the day, but talked about Matt Rose on the Saturday game. Talk about him again on this one because he had a double down the left field line, I believe, in this one. I think it was in the ninth inning. But yeah, no, I mean, it was just a really great day all around for Bulls offensively.
Absolutely. Interesting note for Carlos Hakame on this one. Actually, it has a number in every statistical category. Even left on base. So, anyways, he had a great weekend, Carlos. Not trying to pick on you, bud. Again, you had a fantastic job. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. I really enjoyed Sebastian Greco's backside home run. I think he's really become a there's a lot of teams that are shifting on him where he's maybe getting into one of those guys where being way too pull happy. And so again, you want to see him show that backside pop to maybe give some guys a little bit of a chance to rise. Say, hey, maybe he's not straight pull. Matt, do you have any final thoughts?
That's a great point, but one other thing I wanted to add to your comment about Carlos Hakamé being in every statistical category. He also had a stolen base and a hit by pitch as well, which doesn't show up in the main box score.
Yeah, you're right. And hey, look, speaking of that, look, Ryan Pruitt showing up down there, stealing a couple bases, also getting hit by a pitch. So absolutely, absolutely fantastic. Well, guys, we'll look at this kind of as a final. John, do you have any final thoughts looking at the series as a whole, from this past weekend?
I think we got into a conversation amongst us as a group. You know, it just really shows how much these conference series matter in terms of, you know, overall standings. We're going to get into conference or standings a little bit later on, but amongst mid-majors, you know, we saw us moving on up a little bit. So we really just got to keep winning these conference series, man, especially on the road. That holds a lot of weight with RPI. So just really good to see us get another one on the road.
Absolutely. Win 2 out of 3. Name of the game. Matt, what are you saying? Thinking.
Yeah, so the main thing is are you talking about the Bruin picks?
No. Just final thoughts on the weekend series of Wichita.
Yeah, like John said, I think the name of the game is win 2 out of 3, and we continue to do that. We're currently 12-6 in the standings, and you know, I think we have a good chance to continue that.
Absolutely. Well, there were other games in the American Athletic Conference, as there always is, and we had our pick'ems. We'll kind of walk through the results of last week's and talk about the pick'em, and then we'll look at how that shaped out the conferences. I will kind of run through these really quickly, and then we'll talk about them. UAB hosted Rice, and UAB took that series. Charlotte beat FAU. That was at Charlotte. ECU allowed Tulane to come into Greenville and win, and UTSA handled business against Memphis, I believe, in sweep fashion. The way the pick'em shaped out, it really came down to FAU versus Charlotte. That was really the swing series. So I'm going to start there. John, what do you think happened here? I mean, I feel like Charlotte jumped out on him and then got him on Sunday, but FAU's kind of fallen here, aren't they?
Yeah, and as much as I'd like to talk about FAU falling, you really got to talk about Charlotte's talent and the pitching staff. If you look at conference stats, you know, they're pretty much leading every major category as a team, as a staff in pitching. And I believe Gillespie is heading all of those. You know, Gillespie's a really good starting arm in Charlotte, and yeah, they've just been really, really good. Pitching wise, and they play really tough at home. I mentioned that when we were going into that series. They play really well at home, and I thought FAU, you know, I thought they were going to get it done personally. They've been playing, they're just a tough team, you know. But maybe their weakness is playing on the road. Who knows what happened, but it's cool to see a newcomer to the conference, you know, like Charlotte, really make a name for themselves. And also, I don't mind them getting the series win because we took 2 out of 3 from them. So that also looks really good for us. So good on Charlotte, and looking forward to seeing them in the tournament.
Yeah, Matt, what'd you think about this one?
Yeah, same thing that John is saying. The fact that we took 2 out of 3 from Charlotte already, we already have the tiebreaker over them. I think that's a big, you know, result for us. And the fact that we have FAU, if we can have FAU beat up a little bit as we get into a series with them, I think that can also help us out. You know, they've dropped 2 out of their last 3 series as well in conference play. So definitely, I think it'll be really interesting when we get a chance to play them in Boca.
Imagine that Friday night matchup, Corey Brown and Blake Gillespie. Whew. That's
What's his name?
oh
What?
no,
Burke.
Gillespie is Charlotte. I'm
Yeah.
talking about
Beard. Trey Beard.
Beard, Trey Beard.
Yes, that will be.
Yes. Oh, that's gonna
We
be
actually,
amazing.
I know we missed. Hopefully, I still have some hope that somehow, some way, like in the conference tournament, we're gonna get to see Braun versus Gillespie. Because the awkward schedule kind of took that away from us.
That's right. Yeah, we put it on Thursday.
So again, we're gonna hold out hope for that somehow, some way. I'll just kind of briefly. I mean, UTSA handled Memphis at home. I think everyone maybe. If you weren't calling sweep, you were calling UTSA. They kind of did what they had to do. And so I'll just kind of leave that at that. I do want to bring up ECU, Tulane, UAB, and Rice. They were both kind of misses for really everybody. I will let you guys kind of split this one so we can move kind of along. Matt, I'll let you pick the first game here. Pick one and tell me what you thought about it.
Yeah, I thought the one that was really interesting to me is ECU dropping the series. And unfortunately for them and their fans, they have a good fan base, but they've dropped three out of their last four conference series, and they don't look too good doing it either. So definitely they're definitely not on the top of the conference totem pole anymore, and it'll be interesting when we host them at the last series of the year.
Absolutely. They struggle to pitch, just cannot find who they want to be on the mound when it matters most. And that's a struggle. And unfortunately we know what that feels like from years past, not this season. They just struggle. Rice at UAB. Everybody thought Rice was on the up. UAB was on the down. John, we'll kick this one over to you. Do you think this is just a situation where Rice is maybe still on the up, but just not really ready to go on the road and make it happen?
Yeah, I think it's a team that was had like 5 wins when that head coach took over. You know, they're still going to have holes. I do think that the overall trend is an upswing for them, but they just hit kind of a roadblock. You know, UAB, we handed them their first home loss, so we know they play well at home. And honestly, what I was kind of surprised to see was UAB put up 21 runs on that weekend. So they did not hit well against us. And I mean that I'm not trying to say anything about our pitching staff or anything like that. Like they just didn't look like they had real competitive offensive at bats. So I haven't watched any UAB games since that series that we played them in, but I don't know if they're just starting to hit the ball a little bit, getting closer to tournament play or what, but I was definitely shocked by this one. I thought Rice was going to come in. I almost said Rice was going to sweep, to be honest. I was that confident in Rice coming in. Kind of the same letdown with FAU. So really perplexing results for me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, it was a rough kind of week for everybody. I myself, Joseph Brennan from X, and Mark all went 2-2. Matt and John with the 1-3. Again, it all came down to that FAU Charlotte series. I don't think I updated the finals. I'll give a total updates after next week. But with that series, we do have some look at the standings. UTSA really kind of separates themselves with that sweep over Memphis, them giving them a 3-game lead on the rest of the field, which is us, South Florida, followed by Charlotte, FAU, Tulane, ECU, UAB, Rice, Wichita State, and Memphis. Eight teams are going to make the tournament. It seems like the bottom half of this might be the more kind of interesting race to keep an eye on. I'll start with Matt. Matt, what do you think here when you look at these standings as we kind of get into crunch time?
Yeah, the biggest thing is I think the mid-major series of the weekend coming up against UTSA. Obviously, we're 3 games back. A sweep of UTSA gets us to be tied for first going into the last 2 weeks of the season. And then aside from that, you know, we got some teams that are right behind us as well. Charlotte only a game behind us, and FAU and Tulane only 2 games behind us, as well as ECU. So there's a lot of teams in the top, you know, four or five that are really close with each other. And like you said too, I think it's really interesting to see who those last two teams will be to make it to the conference tournament. It's interesting with Rice's, you know, obviously not last weekend, but their recent play, they've gotten themselves in a position where they've moved ahead Wichita State to be in that eighth spot.
Absolutely. I think if you took the top six of this conference that has separated itself, and I think if you look back in our archives a few weeks ago, me and Matt, we talked about it that there was going to be about six teams that separated themselves in this conference, and we've seen that. I think what's interesting is I think if you ask somebody to kind of sort those teams out beginning of the year, you might even do it in reverse order, like East Carolina, Tulane, FAU, Charlotte, South Florida, UTSA. But we don't. We see it the other way around with UTSA and South Florida on top. John, what do you think when you look at these standings?
Yeah, with East Carolina, I mean, they're all not. So you've got same thing as last week. You've got three teams knotted up. The only team that separated themselves was Charlotte, I think, like Matt said. Can't help but to like kind of look forward to conference play and how seeding is going to work out. But there's just so much left, baseball left to play. I personally, I think that Rice is probably going to overtake UAB, but I could be wrong there. I still think Rice is a mover in this order here, and I think East Carolina probably ends up more middle of the pack as well. But they're hitting their own struggles as well with pitching. So honestly, fellas, like I really, you could see anything, and who knows what the heck we're gonna see out of these teams moving forward. We're beating the crap out of each other in the conference. Like these teams are just.
Yeah.
Or beat each other up, and you're seeing a lot of series results that nobody's really expecting. So I don't really know what to expect in terms of overall standings, other than, the only teams that are proven to be, for sure are the top three. They're all trending the right direction, and even we have a really tough stretch of schedule coming up. So who knows what happens with our conference record? Anything can happen, and it's really exciting.
Absolutely. I think the race is really down there with Wichita State and Rice, and UAB trying to figure out who's going to get into those last two spots. I think everybody else is maybe kind of jockeying for position,
Yeah.
which in a tournament where there's no buys, it's I don't know, you got to beat everybody anyway, and so I really hate kind of getting too nitpicky over what seed we get here and there. Again, there are obviously some advantages, in terms of being home teams and stuff like that, but again, I think we, like John mentioned, I think we've seen the top three kind of separate, and they're going to kind of know that they're going to be in those top seeds. I think you've got that next three that firmly believes they're going to be in the tournament. And then, you got that bottom four there that two of them know that they're not going to make the tournament. But we do have some viewer, I'm sorry, social media questions that do kind of play along with this. The first one will come from Joseph Brennan. Sorry, Joseph asks, with three weekend series remaining, what do you predict the Bulls will earn for the conference tourney? I'm sorry, what seed do you predict the Bulls will earn for the conference tournament in Clearwater? John, I'll let you start here. Play a little bracketology here. What are you thinking? Where are the Bulls trending?
I think we're trending in the right direction, but like I said, our two toughest series are, you could even argue three, with the last one being ECU, even though they're not playing as well right now. You know what they're going to do closer to tournament time. So our toughest stretch of schedule is ahead of us. So I would have to see what Charlotte has remaining. I could comfortably say that we would enter as a three seed, and that'll be my prediction.
Matt, what do you think, bud?
I am going to put my rose bottle glasses on, and I'm going to say the Bulls will win the regular season championship and be the one seed. And my reasoning behind it is, especially with FAU and ECU kind of struggling as of late, I think that we'll have a pretty competitive series with them, but I do feel like we'll get both of those series. And also this weekend against UTSA. UTSA is incredible at home. They're 22-2 at home, but on the road, they're not exactly the same team. And I think that with the environment that I'm expecting at the Red this weekend, it's really going to benefit the Bulls a lot. And I think that we have a good opportunity of taking the series this weekend as well.
Yeah, I have some thoughts too about the as far as the weekend series, and we'll talk about that a little later on. But just to kind of answer this question quickly, I think we're, if I had to put a percentage on it, I think we're trending probably 70 to 80% towards the two seed. I think UTSA, like I said, they really made a statement with the sweep this weekend to get that 3-game lead. I think it's going to be really tough to sweep them, and if we don't sweep them, that kind of doesn't put it in our hands at that point. It kind of puts it on UTSA's hands, and I don't foresee them stumbling enough to lose a series or even worse, get swept themselves, which is what we would need. And like Matt pointed out, we have two tough series kind of after that with FAU and UAB, which aren't going to be cakewalks. Can't really anticipate sweeps in those as well. FAU's is going to be on the road, which is going to be tough to come away with a series win in general. So that's why I've got us locked into that too. I think we're going to come into the two seed. I think there's a chance, that we pick up 5 or 6 wins here in conference going forward, and I think that's enough to get it done. Is it enough to overtake UTSA? I don't know. I think they're in the driver's seat there. Second question, which does kind of play along with that, is how many games do you think the Bulls will win? This is the first question that came from our friend Nancy Caro, supporter of the show. Thank you, Nancy. Crystal ball, John, what do you think going forward? I can bring up our schedule. I believe we have about 14 games remaining.
Following along with you here.
See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 games remaining.
Y'all aren't gonna like my answer. I think that, going with a midweek against Stetson, a midweek against Florida, we go away to FAU.
Florida and FAU, North Florida and FAU are on the road as well.
North Florida, I'm not too worried about, but they have had some, like, it's a midweek, anything can happen. I'm gonna say we go 8-5, but I don't want to say 7-6 because I don't want to have any haters. You know what I'm saying? But I'll say 8-5 for remainder of the season, which I think would be competitive because UTSA, while they have a series left against Rice, they also play ECU next week, so anything can happen with those guys. But I'll say 8-5, which would put us in a commanding position going into conference play or conference tournament.
Yeah, I believe 32-22 would be the overall there, which plays into, I believe, what my beginning of the season prediction was between 30 and 35 wins. Which I'm still there. Before I get there, Matt, what do you think about this one?
I'm gonna put my rose bottle glasses on again, and
Never
I'm gonna
takes them
say
off.
we're gonna no, exactly. I'm gonna say that we're gonna go 10-3, and I think that we have an opportunity to get a road upset against the Florida Gators. I know they've been playing extremely well as of late, but I think this late in the season, I think a lot of teams are very focused on weekend series. And I think that that game means something to USF being able to, beat a superior in-state rival. I think USF's going to really bring their best in that game. So my prediction is 34 wins and however many losses that is,
34.
25 losses.
I'm on the eight wins as we move out, whatever that will equal out to. I think it's 32 wins. And I'm on it for this reasoning. I think we take two. I think we win every series going out. That's my rose colored glasses right there. We're not going to drop either one, any of these last three. So that's 2, 4, 6. I think in between that, we've got really, really tough midweeks. I am on board with we're going to get it right on Stetson, even though I think they've beaten us 5 straight. We haven't figured out it yet, but we're going to get it right on Stetson. But that midweeks, with Florida and North Florida, that's tough. And as we've pointed out, because of our RPI positioning and the way this works, our conference games matter way more. In terms of anything, in terms of our midweeks, that's not to say that we don't try to go out and win them, but it does mean that when Coach Hannes and Coach Slayer start making decisions on who goes out there, it affects that, especially when you look at, the two midweeks in between two very, very important weekend series that we have coming up. Kind of wish that was scheduled differently. But it's not. So again, 32 wins is where I'm at on that. And I'm kind of with you, John. It could be 31, and we might drop all three of those midweeks. They're tough. I mean, we know Stetson stuff. We've seen that be tough. We know Florida stuff. Their RPI is 19. Don't care about the record. North Florida just hits at a moment that's of weakness that's vulnerable for us. So it'll be what it'll be. Final question came from a follower from John. I'll let you kind of introduce him as well, but he wanted to know about a breakout player. John, I'll let you take this one away first.
This is coming out of at Lynch FDFS on Twitter. His name's Ryan Lynch, old roommate of mine. He wants to know the breakout player for the rest of the season. And for me personally, I kind of alluded to it earlier. If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have probably said Austin Newton or Tripp. But for me right now, you'd be silly not to say Carlos Hakamé. He's top five in basically every hitting category. He's a starting second baseman, so he's going to get his at bats. I don't know if you'd really call it a breakout player, but more so just to kind of keep on the trend side of things and keep trending up for USF. So I'm going to go with Carlos Hakamé for my breakout player of the rest of the season.
That's a good one. We can also put breakout player or player to watch too. Like who's going to stand out for you there, Matt? We'll kick to you now.
In terms of breakout players, I think that we're going to continue to see Nolan Bernard take on a bigger role, especially as our starting situation really gets figured out. I think that we're going to see him in a lot of very high leverage situations, and I think his usage will go up as well. He's done such a great job as only a freshman this year, and I think he's going to be a key part to what we're going to be doing on the pitching side of things.
Absolutely. For me, and again, I don't know if this is breakout, but you think of players that we haven't seen a lot from them, and it's kind of a recency bias, and the reason that we haven't seen a lot from him is very valid. It's because he's not there. And that's Bryce Archie. I think he's going to come back. He's going to be a one sport player again. I think the rotation may kind of form itself out with maybe him being in the relief role, where maybe we thought he was going to be a starter at one time, but I could definitely see him coming in tournament time, being a power reliever, coming in, getting a couple innings here, a couple innings there, ends up pitching 7 or 8 innings throughout the week of really good work, but contributes to every or more games than maybe a traditional starter is. I think he's going to be the player to watch as we move forward as we get into May. All right. I think that does it for our social media questions at this time. We do have one more coming from Nancy Carroll, but we will get to hers in a few minutes as it'll kind of play into what we're doing. What we're going to do now is we're going to talk about the games we have coming up, guys. And we kind of talked about it at first when we were talking about moving forward, but we have this big midweek matchup. I'll get through it, guys. Just stay with me. With Stetson coming up, we played Stetson earlier this year. Always a tough matchup for us. As I mentioned, I believe we have a bit of a losing streak going on against them. Bit of a surpriser. I remember texting you guys when this one ended and said, there may have been a point I fell asleep through this one just because it was kind of a drag. I did not expect a 3-1 matchup. John, I'll let you kind of start here. What did you think, or what are you thinking about this midweek with Stetson?
It's going to be interesting. It's going to, first of all, the task at hand is not looking ahead to UTSA. We've got probably our toughest opponent left on the schedule coming to town. While the conference games are going to be supreme in terms of how much weight they hold, we still have to play tomorrow. We're still going on the road, and we're playing a very good Stetson team. They're 12-3 since our last matchup with them. they can pitch really well. They've got multiple arms that can go in the midweeks, and that game against us last time stayed relatively low scoring. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what we do from a pitching standpoint. Not only this week, but next week as well with the two midweeks. But we're talking about Stetson right now, and I think that it's going to be really interesting to see what our offense brings to the table tomorrow, because how fired up do they get for these midweeks? How much memory do they have of that last matchup? We're going to really see how much every single game matters to these boys. And I think that we win a narrow one, and it's going to be a little bit more high scoring than last game as well. I'm going 6-5 USF wins on the road.
Absolutely. Definitely want to see the offense get hot because we want to see them kind of be hot moving into this big matchup. You don't want to see them kind of go through Tuesday and be looking for answers. You want to kind of want to see them feeling like, hey, I just need to get in the cage and do what I'm doing. Matt, what are you looking at when you think about, or what are you looking at when it comes to this midweek matchup with Stetson?
Yeah, I agree with both you guys. I really think that it's an important game for our offense to, continue to build off the momentum from this past Sunday. Obviously, last time that we played Stetson, it wasn't a good game offensively, and it wasn't necessarily a lack of base runners either. We were able to draw four walks, we had six hits, but only scored one run, and with that, you're not going to win a whole lot of ball games. And this time around, we really need to build that momentum up going into this upcoming weekend. And I thought our pitching did really well last time against Stetson. We had 10 strikeouts, only gave up 3 earned runs and no walks. If we run out those same guys that we did last time, and our bats can swing it a little bit better, I think we got a good chance.
Absolutely. We talked about it, with our current RPI status, conference games are kind of what's important in terms of the record, but that doesn't mean that these midweek games aren't important in terms of doing what we got to do to get right. And I look at the pitching. I think I would like to see Archie come out and throw, 2 or 3 innings in this one. But then, I would like to see kind of what we saw with the last time. With Golden Bomb comes out and gets a couple, then Corbin Little gets a little bit, Bernard gets a little bit, Jack Nedro got a little bit. Again, Nedro probably not with his current role. That might have changed, but I mean, you look at last weekend, we didn't use that many relievers, I think 7 pitchers total over the weekend. And so some of these guys have got to get some work in. And so I think we're going to see that, win, lose, or draw. Some of these guys are going to be kind of moving through. And, from a coaching standpoint, what's the drawback from that? Well, it's a lot easier to win a game when you throw, two or three guys, because you only need two or three guys to be on that night. When you're throwing five or six, you need all five or six guys to be on, because the one guy that's off is usually the guy that's going to drop it, which is what we saw in that last week, midweek matchup with Stetson. We only had one pitcher who gave up a crooked number, and that turned out to be the issue. Offensively, this is probably a time we got to get some guys some at bats. A name that pops up to my mind is Carter Murphy. We haven't seen him in a long time. He might be a bat that we need to see in a clutch situation. He's got some pop. Pop doesn't tend to develop if it doesn't get ABs. And so, well, I guess that's a pretty common theme for anything with hitting. If you're not batting, you're probably not going to develop very well. So we do need to see. I think we need to see Carter Murphy get an AB here, if not a start. At third base, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Any final thoughts on this, guys? I'll kind of kick it to both of you.
Nothing
Nope.
on mine.
No. Good. Cool.
Let's
All right. Go ahead.
Matt, real quick. Who's your breakout pitcher for tomorrow then? Like, who do you want? Who are you calling on? Because we don't have Nedro to really depend on a bullpen outing, right? We saw the line, right? For last matchup against Stetson, we had five deep. Who are you looking to turn to? Say we save Bryce Archie for the weekend, which I think would be smart. There's arguments to, get him some reps because he hasn't pitched in close to 2 weeks at this point. But Who are you looking to really, set the tone early for the Bulls from a pitching standpoint, Matt?
I think for me, I would like to see Matt Brown get another opportunity. We know that he's a guy that can go 5 innings, and we've seen him have success in a midweek start before going 5 innings. And I believe in that game, he only, he didn't give up any earned runs. If we can have another guy that can go, 4 or 5 innings in any of these ball games and pitch well, I think that's really going to benefit us when it comes to the tournament.
I like that. I'm looking for more of the same a little bit from Matt Goldenbaum. I think that he holds a key piece for this matchup. I don't know why. It just feels like a Golden Bull matchup, and I'd like to see him get the opportunity to go four, because there was a certain stretch in this season when we weren't trending back towards a more traditional starting pitcher. Then you have your relievers coming when we had the opener set up, where Goldenbaum was kind of starting to set himself up with a he had a couple opening games against, I think, FGCU. He had that one against Stetson, and you were wondering, is Hanna's trying to stretch this guy out, because he's got live velocity, he's got control of three pitches, he's a freshman, so he's a little green, no pun intended, but I think that the sky's really the limit for Goldenbaum, and I would really like to as well. I agree with you on Matt Brown. I think he's got a huge place to play tomorrow as well, and for all the midweeks moving forward that we have remaining, to be completely clear. But yeah, I think I'd like to see a lot out of the Golden Bull tomorrow.
Absolutely. It's gonna be fun to watch. Like I said, I think it's gonna be a good chance for us to kind of watch and see how things develop going into this big series that we got coming up with UTSA, and we'll kind of look at that now. UTSA is 33-10 overall, as Matt pointed out, 22-2 at home. However, they are 11-8 on the road, a little more down to earth. They are on a hot streak, 8-2 in their last 10. They have won their last four, including their last three road games. With an RPI of 27, they are the conference's only shot at a at-large bid at the moment. And really the only team that's going to get it going forward. Matt, I'll let you kind of start here. What stands out to you as we kind of look at this big weekend matchup?
Yeah, like you said, big weekend matchup we got against number 27 in the RPI. They've had a great season. I don't think anyone was fully expecting them to have a season like they did. But as you pointed out, I think they're a little bit more pedestrian when it comes to road games. And we have an opportunity as Bulls fans to really make an impact on the result of the weekend. And I think if you guys are listening to this podcast, make sure that you're out there to at least two games this weekend. If you haven't been out to the Red that much this season, this is definitely the series to be at.
Absolutely. We mentioned the road. They're kind of like a Florida team. They don't leave the state of Texas very often. However, the last time they did, I believe they went to Charlotte and they won that series. So again, we're hoping for a little bit different result. John, what stands out to you as we preview this?
I have been coming in with kind of like the devil's advocate, and I hate to do it again. We talked about the pedestrian stats for them on the road. However, they're 11-8 on the road overall, but they're 7-2 in conference matchups on the road. I think that definitely speaks. Is that a trend or a result, Adam? We like to talk about that. 7-2 conference matchups on the road. I'm not looking for, I'm looking forward to this matchup because it's going to be great baseball, but they lead every major category in the American offensively. They've got a 985 team OPS, a 325 team batting average. They've got 205 hits as a staff. They've got 30 home runs on the season. They've scored 174 runs this season, second place being USF with 124. That's a 50-run differential on the next best in terms of total runs scored. If you look at OPS, in the conference. They have three guys at the top three. Diego Diaz, he's kind of got a smaller sample size, 21 at bats on the season, 429 batting average with a 1.318 OPS. Andrew Stuckey, 365 batting average, 1.227 OPS. Norris McClure, 379 batting average, 1.151 OPS with 23 RBIs, third in the American. You know, they're a little vulnerable from a pitching standpoint. They're about on par with us from a pitching standpoint. Not calling us vulnerable, but I'm not calling us elite either. So I think that if we're gonna hang with this team, bats better be coming early and often. I do not think that the road. You bring up a good point about them not leaving the state of Texas often. That's a long road travel. You know, one I've made several times having family in Texas. It's definitely a long travel. You know, you're switching time zones. You're far away from home. You're leaving your home state. So maybe that comes into play. But I think the 7-2 overall in conference road games plays a lot heavier than 11-8 overall, personally. And a little bit later on in this section, I can get into their starting pitching if we'd like.
Yeah, I think the 7-2 conference road games. I think it's also I really look at the Charlotte series because I mean the other two teams are Wichita State and UAB. UAB playing well at home, but again RPI 156. Charlotte RPI 77, a little closer to us at RPI 92. One thing that I And again, it stands out to me because it's Charlotte. They get Gillespie on Friday night, which is comparable to our Braun on Friday night. One thing that UTSA does very well is they ambush Friday night guys. They have scored 9+ runs in 5 straight Friday night games.
Whew, bringing the heat with that stat, Adam. I
All
love
right,
that.
so they really jump on Friday night guys, and we know kind of what that does to a team whenever you do that. Ironically enough, they do sometimes kind of drop that Saturday game after, but again, that the Charlotte it was the difference, right? That's where Gillespie got them on Friday night. Only scored 2 runs and they lost. However, they were able to come back and they did answer on that Saturday. But again, that Sunday game was tight. So I think where you get this team is kind of what Charlotte almost accomplished, where they got them on Friday, weathered a storm on Saturday. And then what we would need is I think our Sunday guy right now, Nedrow, is better than Charlotte's Sunday guy on March 23rd, when he dropped a 6-5 decision at UTSA. And so that's where I think we win this series, would be on Friday and Sunday, which leads us, actually, real quick, John, I'll let you get a few points on the pitchers there that you had. I do kind of want to hear a few quick points on that.
Yeah, so they've had no switching it up. All three of their starters have six starts in conference play. Their Friday night guy is going to be Zach Royce. He's got a 4 ERA. He's top five in the AAC with 32 Ks on the season, walking 10 guys in that span as well. Opponent batting average is 254. And I'm sorry, he's not top five, top 10 in Ks. He's seventh overall. You got Braylon Owens going on Saturday. A little bit shakier on the ERA front, 5.4 ERA and 30 Ks on the season, which is good for eighth in the AAC. You start to see the opponent batting average kind of sneak up a little bit on him with a 283 batting average. He's both of those two that I've mentioned have allowed five home runs on the season, and then rounding it off for them is Connor Miles. He's the only one with only 2 wins on the season, so it looks like they may have lost some in the bullpen with 5.59 ERA, 24-9 K to walk ratio, an opponent batting average of 274. But one thing I want to mention is Robert Orlovsky. Okay, he's not a starter. He's going to be someone that we see early and often out of their bullpen, probably the first arm that they go to. He trails only Blake Gillespie in ERA on the season in conference play with a 2.38 ERA. He's got 22 and a third innings pitch on the season, and he leads the AAC in opponent batting average at 171. So, and is sixth in the AAC in saves in conference play. But Robert Orlovsky is going to be another name to remember for that staff.
That is definitely something we need to keep an eye on as we watch this this weekend series. Matt, I'm going to kick it over to you if you have any final thoughts, and if you don't, go ahead and give us your answer to Miss Nancy Caro's final question, which you heard my answer earlier, which was Bulls take Friday and Sunday. But how many games do you think the Bulls will win this weekend?
I think this series is really going to come down to how our pitching staff or our starting rotation continues to progress. If our starting rotation can contain a very elite offense that UTSA has, I think our offense can do enough against their pitching staff in order to win ball games. It's really going to come down to how well does Corey Braun pitch, how well does Austin Newton pitch, how well does Jack Nedrow pitch. If those three guys are on their game, I think we can easily, I wouldn't say anything's easy, but I think we can win this series. And honestly, if the guys pitch as well as they're capable of, I think there's an opportunity that we could sweep. I'm not taking off my rose-colored glasses, but I think there's an opportunity there.
All righty. Big time prediction there. John, what do you think? What do you think this weekend's going to shape out?
Don't ask me that, man.
What is your path to the Bulls winning two?
Oh, my path to the Bulls winning two is absolutely what you just said. It's Friday, Sunday. Those are, in my opinion, we're getting the most consistent starting matchups from Corey Braun and Jack Nedrow. You know what? I was gonna say we win one of three. I'm going to say we win two of three and go that exact route Friday, Sunday.
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence in that as well. Well, we will now kind of move into our final segment of the night, which is we like to take a look at the 11.7 mid-major rankings. Again, this is presented by 11.7 Podcast, and they are pretty awesome. They do an awful lot covering mid-major baseball, which tends to get overlooked at times when and a lot of people are looking at the SEC and all of that. And that's not to say that they don't, if you're the type that wants to hear all that, just go support them. They do a great job. Their latest power rankings has the UC Irvine Anteaters still on top. I believe they're ranked in the top 10 nationally at this point. They're going to be a host and potential super regional host. And they're really fun to watch. They're really good. I've actually caught a few of their games on ESPN Plus because they tend to play late night when we're done. So you got that subscription, go ahead and throw them on. Most interesting thing of the weekend, kind of the Cinderella of the year, Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. They dropped three to FIU, a team that we are familiar with. Bulls move on up to 12. UTSA sits atop for the conference at six. I will kick it over to Matt first. Looking at it, what's interesting? What do you like?
I was really happy to see Bulls moved up a couple of spots. I know it wasn't our best week dropping the midweek and not getting a sweep this past weekend, but we did move up to number 12 after being 14, I believe, in the last week's rendition. And I think the big thing here is just the overall matchup. We got UTSA at number 6 and we're number 12 and we're going head to head this upcoming weekend.
Absolutely. John, what do you think?
I really like seeing, three American teams in the top 25, including one of which we have a win against in a series, being Charlotte. But with our next four games coming against top 10, mid-major top 25 teams, it's always the casuals on the social media outlets that seem to be the most vocal. So they kind of try to run away with these kind of things. Just keep in mind that we're playing two very good opponents over the next four games, and I'm not saying that that's going to It will play into the result. I'm not predicting our result based off of that. I think that we have a great chance in all four games, but just keep in mind the level of competition that we're going up against before you start losing hope if it doesn't go our way. I do think it'll go our way, but it's just Stetson's number nine, UTSA's number six. But like I said, mostly it's really great to see three American teams in the top 25. And imagine if, FAU and ECU didn't fall off, we'd be up there with, Conference USA and all those other good mid majors that are above us, in terms of overall talent in the conference. So, we're not far away. I like where we're at. I like where we're at moving forward. And I think that, we have a fun week of baseball ahead of us, fellas.
Absolutely. Like you mentioned, the two top 10 opponents coming up next four games, real opportunity to move up the list. It is important to note that these guys, they tend to not overreact either way on a week-to-week basis. They tend to let teams kind of trend a certain way for a couple of weeks before they really drop them out. We saw that we did not drop very far when we dropped that series to Rice, and we're kind of slowly climbing our way up. So, but I do expect if we can come away, 2-2, or even 3-1 out of those four. I would expect us to kind of be bumping into the top 10 of these power rankings just based off the because at that point I think they'd have to move UT. Dallas Baptist is really good.
They
Man, that
are.
top five is really good. Like,
Yeah.
the top five of his rankings, those are your mid-major teams that are going to make waves in the tournament. UC Irvine Anteaters, Coastal Carolina, Southern Miss, Troy, Dallas Baptist. Bracketologists, when you start filling those out, those are the mid-major guys that those are going to really, they're going to make some noise. Anybody have any final thoughts before we move into our final thoughts?
How many regionals are going to be held in the hosted in the state of Texas with UT dominating SEC play, and then you got Dallas Baptist playing the way they are. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I could see multiple. I could see multiple. There's not going to be a lot in the state of Florida, which I think is going to be interesting.
Which would be a first for the state of Florida, big time.
Because I looked at that when you looked at maybe our potential landing spots. I was like, well, we usually go to Gainesville. Well, Gainesville's not going to host. Stetson's not going to host. Tallahassee's going to host, but I mean, that's one slot.
Alabama.
That's where I looked at. I looked at Alabama. I looked at Auburn, and I thought, oh God, I don't want to go to Baton Rouge. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. We'll move on now to our final thoughts. Matt, I'll kick to you first on final thoughts. I know you've got we got a tailgate to talk about this weekend, right?
If you have a chance, make it out to our tailgate. We usually start about 3 hours before first pitch. It's a really great time. We're gonna get together and, have some good food, some good drinks, and it's gonna be a good warm up for a good game on Saturday.
Absolutely. That's fun. John, any final thoughts?
Just makes me a little sad that I'm not gonna be at the tailgate, fellas. Man, those are always a good time. Somebody pick up my slack on the cornhole front. Somebody
You're the
make
life
sure.
of the you're the life of the party too, John.
Somebody's just got to make sure to keep old Tony in check for me too. He likes to get rowdy for those weekend games, and I absolutely love it. Final thoughts. I just think that we're gonna have a really competitive week of baseball coming up, and be real happy with 2-2, elated with 3-1. I'm happy with where we're at.
Absolutely, guys. Well, as Matt mentioned, we do have that tailgate coming up on Saturday for this huge weekend series that we have coming up with the UTSA Roadrunners, which we're hoping will be getting ready to win the series as Corey Braun takes that Friday night game. But until then, be on the lookout again. The Bulls are in DeLand for Tuesday. That game will be on ESPN Plus, as well the UTSA game. If you can't make it out to the Red again, that'll be on ESPN Plus. But again, we really hope you do, as we need all the Bulls fans we can to support that. We also appreciate your support for the podcast. Go ahead and like and subscribe. Turn on your notifications if you haven't already. That way you know exactly when these podcasts will be dropping. Well, folks, that's all we got for tonight. As always, go Bulls.
Bubbles.